Thank you very much, friends. I'm honored to be here, and really, Matt said it right, that we are responsible to lay the road for Christ to come back, to bring everything to its fulfillment. And he is waiting on us. So we are responsible to take the gospel and present to those whom God has brought to our own doorsteps. We live in a world now that we don't need to leave our country, go overseas, travel thousands of miles, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, plan perhaps for our whole family or as an individual. No, now opportunities is just outside our doorsteps. So purpose of me being here is to encourage each one of us today, not only to learn a little bit about Muslims, that who they are, what their beliefs are, but also to encourage each one of us that how easy it can be to engage in a productive conversation with them. It doesn't involve a lot of money, a lot of time, or any extensive resources. The only thing it involves is our passion, our desire, and then availability perhaps. So let me start with introducing myself and a little bit about my family and the ministry I lead. Voice of Christians is the ministry, and this first slide is a picture that was taken on the day when I was baptized, April 4th, 2002. That was the day when I was given this this honor to be accounted as God's son. I was baptized in a secret place. That's why it's a little dark, and it was all this arrangement is made for those who leave Islam. It's inside a room where they had this arrangement to accommodate those baptisms, which cannot take place, or there certainly be risk in public. Next slide. This is not a recent picture. Our youngest just turned 3 now, so it's about 2 years old picture, little over 2 years old picture, but we are still 4, family of 4 children with my wife and myself. Move over to the next one, please. Talking about my testimony, I won't spend much time on sharing my testimony today. I will leave it for tomorrow, so you can come back. I'm from Muslim background. I was born and raised in Pakistan in a very devout Muslim family, and it was God's grace that he rescued me out of that darkness. And I accepted Christ, or better to say, Christ accepted me in 2002. Then I was baptized, as I said, on April 4, 2002, same year. Move over to the next slide, please. Primary purpose for me to be here today is to talk about Islam and Muslims living here in our own country and give you a little bit taste of their lifestyle and their beliefs. So we will talk about those in next 50 minutes. Please move over to the next slide. Voice of Christians, that is the organization I lead, I founded. There was another organization called Christian Resource Center, which I founded 18 years ago, back in Pakistan in 2005, 16 years ago. The reason behind that was that when I accepted Christ in 2002, between 2002 and 2010, I went through immense amount of persecution. My life was always under threats, death threats. I have to move very carefully, plan my life, my movements very carefully, and still was abused, was beaten. And as a result of that personal experience, God really burdened my heart to do something for persecuted believers, especially for those who leave Islam or Hinduism or perhaps Christian, Sikhism or Buddhism, and become Christians. So through my own experience, I learned that how difficult it can be. And my desire behind forming that organization was to help them, to show them the love that the church is ready to embrace you, church is ready to help you, church is ready to accept you as their new family member when your own family, your own loved ones have cut you off, have rejected you, have decided to perhaps kill you, then there is larger body of Christ which is ready to jump in and accept you as their own family member. So that was the desire behind that organization's formation called Christian Resource Center. And then when I came here, interestingly, within few years, I came to United States in 2010. In 2011, I started working for a construction company, being civil engineer here in Raleigh area. And in 2013, God brought a believer who accepted Christ. He was originally from Jordan, and he was facing death threats here in our own country, and people go because they cannot imagine that that persecution, severe persecution, can happen here. It does happen. It doesn't happen to that same extent as it does in Nigeria or Pakistan or Afghanistan or Somalia, but it does happen here in our own country, in our own back streets. The scale is not as massive or as it doesn't happen that frequently, but it does happen. And over the course of these past 7-8 years, we have rescued several individuals here in America, several Christians, American and immigrants across the board, that they were facing death threats. They were abused, they were beaten, they were given death threats, and they needed help. They needed to be rescued. They needed to be sheltered. So that led to the formation of this organization, Voice of Christians, which was formed in 2017. 2018, we were given all the state permissions, federal permissions. We became 501c3 approved organization. But we have been working here formally or informally since 2013. And now we are growing. As the challenges are growing, the need for this organization is growing here and abroad, all over the world. Next slide, please. Okay, so here we talk about why we exist, and I won't spend too much time on that. Because I really wanted to spend more time on understanding that who Muslims are and how we can reach out to them. As I mentioned about the existence of persecution here in our own country, one thing is that Christianity is being targeted from all sides now. Few recent studies done by LifeWay Research and Pew Organization states that 84% of Christian persecution, 84% of religious persecution happens towards Christians. So most of the religious persecution is always towards Christians. So Christians are by far the largest victims, no matter they are here in America. We have more common, lesser forms of persecution, like oppression, the denial of the freedom of speech. We see that how Christian rights are abused or denied everywhere across the spectrum, everywhere in America. But now it's getting to the next level. It's becoming more kind of physical. It's taking to the point where it's becoming more physical, like abuse, physical abuse, slurs uttered towards Christians, or even physical assaults, or then death threats. That is primary reason behind the existence of this organization. So we work in two ways. One is to spread the awareness, educate church, educate Christians, that why we need to be more open, why we need to understand what Christian persecution means and how it happens, but also encourage them that how they can get involved, how they can pray and help and participate to help a persecuted church. So that is the primary reason behind the existence of Voice of Christians. I will stop here and I will jump over to this presentation. You have already received these pages. And I think tomorrow you will learn more about my testimony and my life and some other facts about the Christian persecution. But today we have dedicated our time to learn more about Muslims and Islam. So I saw as I entered your church that on the wall that the same verse is mentioned from Matthew 28, that we all know it as the reference to Great Commission, that Jesus said that go and make the disciples on all the earth. So that lays the foundation for the very purpose of our existence, or for the existence of our earthly lives. And then also we do it because here as Americans, why we need to learn about Muslims is that they are everywhere now. They are in our apartment complex, as Matthew was talking about the gentleman. Perhaps he was also one of those Muslim immigrants coming to our country. But now there are millions of them living here all across the nation. And that gives us an opportunity, being Christians, being followers of Christ, to present gospel to them. Otherwise, there is a lot of disinformation or misinformation. There is a lot of negative propaganda when they come here that is already in their minds that is towards Christians and Christian nations. And by the way, America is still considered, here we lot of times say that, oh, we are no more a Christian nation. But if you go in, and I'm an outsider, I come from Pakistan, that America is still considered to be the strongest Christian nation in outside world. And I thank Lord that that still is considered our privilege or heritage. And I pray that Lord will, as Christians, will give us opportunity to preserve that, in fact, to empower that, to re-strengthen that privilege that God has given us as a nation called American nation. So opportunities are all around us. We just need to be present, to be ready to take over those opportunities and use those opportunities. a little warning, I captioned it, brace yourself, because everything, whether we are studying or we are learning a new skill or we are working, involves to some extent some risk. And what does that mean is that as we befriend with these immigrants, Muslims, Hindus, Sikhs, Buddhists, or even atheists or agnostics coming to our country, at some point, in some cases, they might become offensive or become even abusive. It does happen. One time I was in Walmart, we started befriending because I was talking to my wife in Urdu, and there was a gentleman on the across the aisle, on the other side of the aisle, and he heard someone talking in Urdu, and he just basically rushed. He ran towards us, he hugged us because we were speaking the same language, and he became very friendly. He told that he is one of the managers there, and he knew that Eastern or Asian people like to save, so he said that if you want to check out the discounted portion or like those clearance items, call me ahead of time and I can tell you what's going, what will be ready for clearance, and then you're kind of like insider, so, and you can come and grab that before anybody else does. And so that friendship grew until a day came when he asked me, which mosque do you go to? And at that point, I felt to introduce my faith to him. And I said, oh, sorry, we don't go to mosque. We are believers of Christ. We are Christians. We go to church. And at that point, though we have been befriending for several weeks now, and he loved our conversations in Urdu, and he just stomped and just walked away from us. This is not the case all the time, but this can happen. So always be ready for unexpected. Like think about that as an encouragement, or as a result of the encouragement we receive today, you start befriending with someone, at some point they just decide to cut off or walk away from that friendship, or decide not to meet you anymore. Don't be discouraged. This is part of our journey. God does not, or has not commissioned us to change the world. He has commissioned us to present the gospel. Then it depends in his own hands who is called, who is chosen, and who is not. Unfortunately, there will be, fortunately, there will be billions in heaven, but unfortunately, there will be billions on the other side of eternity. So we can pray for them that there will be less and less of them, but we cannot decide. This is something that lays in God's own hands. So always be ready for unexpected. there are challenges. Even like when you are going to meet some of your neighbors as a result of today's presentation and they offer you some food which is not like you are not accustomed to, you might end up with having some stomach bug or things like that. So there are a lot that we can be ready in our mind that there can be some unexpected. Culture certainly itself is a big challenge, whether we are meeting somebody else from other part of the world here or overseas. They always bear their own unique culture. So we should be prayerfully ready for all these challenges. And as we pray, I believe that God gives us that ability to tackle these unexpected situations if they are ever presented through our friendship or through our journey alongside these Muslims or Hindus that we are befriending with. And then clarifications. One of the most common things I have found that my Christian friends feel or face that Allah is always or God is always attributed, that Muslims, especially if we are befriending with people coming from Muslim background, from Asia or Middle East or African countries, they will refer to God as Allah. So Allah in general is not a term for their Muslim God or Islamic God. Allah is just a general term for God. Unfortunately, now it has been for centuries attributed towards a certain God, which is the God of Islam. So it just is, I will say that don't feel offended or hesitant to use that word because of your friendship with the Middle Eastern. But then at some point, if you have ability, you can always elaborate on that and explain to your friends, and you will learn more about that aspect in during my presentation today, because there are other forms, less common forms of grammatical terms or words attributable to God, God or true creator, which is Allah or Rabb, but they will not understand. Allah was derived from the term Allah, but Allah is no more used, especially by Muslims. They will always use Allah, especially if they are Arabic speaking people. Okay, moving on to the next part. Christians, we as Christians, it's not a difficult task to find someone living next door to us or perhaps at our workplace or walking through the aisles in a grocery store. There are Muslims all around us. It's just that how we can identify them and start befriending with them. And the best way is to understand about their faith and about their celebrations, different events throughout the year that they celebrate, their festivities, because that, if we have the understanding about their celebrations, that what they celebrate most and how they celebrate, that gives us opportunity to invite them to become their friends. It's, I think, the easiest way to approach to a Muslim by being part of their celebration. And I will talk about that in a few minutes. Let's talk about a few very common terms. Islam, word Islam means submission to the will of God. And certainly Muslims are those, I call them subjugates, because they are not simply the followers. They are the ones who are under that dominion of Islam. They are the ones who are deceived, who are captives of the power of Islam. So,
you're referring to the terms on the white page?
Yes, okay. Yes. So there is kind of an addendum page, white page, that I added these terms. I thought that it will be helpful because many of you may not be familiar with these very common terms that during your possible friendship with Muslims, you may hear these terms. Quran is their holy book. Quran has 114 surahs, and it's basically a primary source of instructions for the tenure of their lives for Muslims. As opposed to Christianity, Islam is Islam tends to control every aspect of Muslims' life, whether how to enter in their own homes or how to enter in mosque, or how many times they can marry, or how to interact with non-believers, or how to react or how to deal with women, things like that. So it's a very extensive system of life. It's just not only a system of faith or belief that tells them that if you follow Allah offer the creeds or follow the creeds of Islam, then you are all set and you will eventually make it to heaven. No, it requires them to take every step very carefully, to follow a set of rules like jihad at some point, or Hajj, and we'll again talk about those five creeds of Islam in a few minutes. Hadith is the compilation of the sayings or acts or actions or even silent approvals of Muhammad. So what does that mean is there is an extensive compilation of Hadith. This is an account of what Muhammad did or what Muhammad said during his earthly life. And Muslims believe that that is the most important, though secondary, source of life or source of instructions or source of inspiration. So in so many times, if there is something which they cannot find in Quran or the instructions for that aspect of life, they cannot find those instructions in Quran, then they refer to Hadith. Then Sunnah. Sunnah is the actions that how Muhammad lived, what he did in during his course of life. Muslims is a general term for those who follow Islam. There are two major sects of or denominations within Muslims, Shiites and Sunnis. Shiites are minority still. They are only about 14% of the total Muslim population, which is close to be 2 billion now. And Sunnis are 84%. The major theological difference between Sunnis and Shiites is that Shiites are the ones who believe that succession of Muhammad's, that it didn't, one thing that it did not ended with the death of Muhammad, it continued and it always lies within the lineage of Muhammad, Muhammad's daughter and son-in-law Ali, and Caliphate, which was section of Muhammad's or the continuity of Islam's tradition, that should lie within Muhammad's family. So Shias believe that, and they believe that Caliphate was the right of Ali. He should have been the successor of Muhammad when Muhammad died, as opposed to Sunnis. Sunnis said no, Muhammad did not leave or left any will or issued any guidance or any command for that particular aspect of Islam. So it came to the ijtihad of the Muslim Ummah. Muslim Ummah is the Islamic nation of Islam, and what they decided was that they chose Abu Bakr as caliph, and majority of Muslims, majority of the followers of Muhammad decided to follow Abu Bakr. So that led the formation of Sunnis, which make about 84% of Muslim population. And then there are sub-denominations within Sunnis. There are hundreds of them, like we find here in Christianity. Not as much as in Islam, but there are more sub-denominations within Sunnis.
Is Wahhabism?
Yeah, Wahhabis are sub-denomination of Sunnis. Yeah, Deobandis, Wahhabis. So we have limited time. There are, so this is the main, like Shiites and Sunnis. Then you can break down Sunnis into like five or six different sub-denominations. Then they have another like third tier of nominations that goes down to like 150 or so, and they have like minor differences.
Do Sunnis and Shia, do they marry each other?
Historically, not. And by the way, the biggest difference for me, and I like to tell my friends there, that 99.9% terrorism happens or is carried out by Sunnis. you can, and I challenge everyone, because there is a lot of propaganda about Iranians and Iran, that Iran is the real threat to the world. No, I disagree with that statement. Go and study the history of Islam. You will not find a single Shia terrorist. 100%, almost 100% of terrorists always come from Sunni side of Islam. Shiites, they are more peace-loving. They are more open to interfaith or interreligion dialogue, though it's hard to convert Shiites. They are more devout than Sunnis. But they are not terrorists. They are peace-loving Muslims as compared to Sunnis. Sunnis are more jihad-loving. They are. Anyhow, that is another topic that we can talk about if I am ever given another chance to come back. I have categorized the relationship between Christians and Muslims when it comes to Christians starting or trying to befriend with Muslims in four stages. And let me first explain about the five pillars those are the core beliefs of Muslims. These are the mandatory affairs for them, that they have to follow these creeds. There is no way that they can be forgiven. First one is Shahada, profession of faith, which is kalma, that every Muslim have to confess their faith, that they believe in Allah and they believe in Muhammad being the final and ultimate prophet and conclusive prophet of Allah. And then there is no God other than Allah. Then moving on to the next prayer, you may have observed that Muslims go to mosque or they offer at their home, or even sometimes I even have observed at our workplace here, if there is any Muslim work in your or my workplace, you will see that they will try to find a corner or somewhere where they can lay their rug, which is called Jainamaz, the place that needs to be clean, pure, holy. But they will use that. They will not just start offering salat on our carpet or anywhere. They will carry that with them and they will offer salat. That is mandatory. That is done five times a day. So think about that. I like to make that point here, that they are mandatory, required to worship Allah five times a day, as compared to us that we barely make it one time to our church on Sundays. So how, if somebody is asked to do something five times a day, how much it will influence his or her life as compared to someone just coming, barely making it to church once a week? So that's where all the radicalism comes, because they are more into their religion. They are receiving more like the bond is more stronger. They are receiving instructions more often than we do. I wish that we have our, at least even if not coming to church, our dedicated prayer hour that every Christian was asked to pray every day. I wish that Jehovah would have made it mandatory. Go ahead.
What happens if they don't?
Okay, so according to Islam, there is no forgiveness. And then I will explain what happens in few minutes. Let me move on to the next one. Alms, zakat giving, charity, as compared to 10%, which is preached by the church or largely believed or followed by Christians, as we know it, tithing. They are asked to give 2.5% towards the cause of Islam. That is called zakat. And then over and above that, if somebody wants. But interestingly, Muslims don't even give that 2.5%. Honestly speaking, all these are mandatory, and as we know that law never satisfies anyone or cannot satisfy humans. And I think that is why we are given freedom through Jesus, and law is not anymore mandatory or required. Because law is basically promotes kind of the form of oppression. And since they are under this oppression that you have to go to mosque or rather pray at home 5 times a day, you have to give 2.5%, otherwise you will never receive forgiveness. You have to fast during the 30 days of Ramadan, which is starting on April 2nd this year. You have to make it to Mecca to offer pilgrimage Hajj. Of at least, that is mandatory, one time, at least one time during the course of a Muslim's life. So when they have all these forms of like, or mandates, what happens is they become corrupt because they find they cannot do it, they are not willing to do it, so they don't do it. Majority of Muslims, you will find that they never pray 5 times a day. So let me talk about that, how practical ways that how we can identify Muslims and then how we can become their friends. And I wish I would have done a little bit better job on this presentation. Perhaps next time I will try my best to make it more comprehensive. I think my concern was that we have limited time. Is there a clock here that... Okay, so I have 25 more minutes to go over this. So as I just mentioned that we will find Muslims starting fasting, which is kind of like a whole month of fasting called Ramadan, here in few days, starting on April 2nd. That gives us opportunity to learn about what Ramadan is, how they fast. Basically, their fasting happens between dawn and dusk. They, by the sunrise, they eat and they make their vow to not eat or not drink, refrain themselves from certain things which can be accounted towards acts of sin. And then they go through the whole day until sun sets, and then they break the fast. So that is called fasting, Muslim fasting, that happens every year during the month of Ramadan, which is the 9th month of Islamic calendar, Hijri calendar. At the conclusion of that month, they have this one of the two biggest celebrations called Eid al-Fitr. So during that Eid, 3 days time, it's very festive. They will buy new clothes, they will exchange gifts with their family and friends, they will eat big meals, and even we might be able to make some observations when we see, if we go to park, we see Muslim families there with their children playing and with wearing new clothes. So that's very festive, and all these can give us opportunity to, if we have ability to identify their celebrations and then try to be part of their celebration. And let me talk about the next event, Eid al-Adha, and then I will share a few insights on how we can use these opportunities. Eid al-Adha is one of, as I said, there are two biggest celebrations, Eid al-Fitr and Eid al-Adha. So Eid al-Adha is the commemoration of the remembrance of the sacrifice made by Ibrahim. They believe that Ibrahim was the prophet of Allah, and he offered his son, not Isaac, but Ishmael. So they commemorate by that event by offering and slaughtering animals every year on a certain time of the year. And that is called Eid al-Adha. So it's interesting that it's called Eid al-Adha, Eid of Isaac. And in Quran, it never tells that Allah asked Abraham to bring his son Ishmael, which was even not the lawful son, he was born of Hagar. It just tells that bring your younger son. So who was younger and who was the firstborn? Isaac. So that itself is an extensive topic. We don't have time to talk about that. But they celebrate Eid al-Adha in remembrance of that. And that is, again, a big celebration for them where they sacrifice animals. Even here, almost every Muslim family will sacrifice even goat or sheep or a cow. And based on their resources, there are certain places, slaughterhouses or places where they can go, and they help them accommodate those offerings, and then they celebrate. They will cook the meat, they will invite their family or friends. A lot of times even they will invite Christian friends to be part of that celebration. So that gives an opportunity down the road to explain and to talk about that, what really happened, who was the son which was asked to be offered as a sacrifice. Then there is Isra and Miraj, that is certainly an Arabic term, but what that refers to is that Muslims believe that one of the two miracles that Muhammad performed during his life was that he traveled to heavens and he met with angels and then with Allah, and then he came back. So during that journey, he was taken from wherever he was sleeping, in his room, in his home. He was taken to temple, Jerusalem, where they believe that it's not the temple for Jews, it's their mosque. They call it Masjid-e-Aqsa. He visited that during that, that period of time, which lasted just a few minutes. But it was through that miracle he was taken at the speed of light to Masjid-e-Aqsa, to Jerusalem, to the temple. From temple, he ascended to heavens. He met Allah. He saw Allah. And he was given the blessings and the power. And then he descended back to his home. So that is a big celebration. And you can read for more details there in that little write-up about that. Nowruz. Nowruz is basically mostly observed by Shiites. But a lot of Sunnis also. It's the first day of their new year based on Iranian calendar or Persian calendar. And it is happening now. It's typically, in some cultures, it's three-day celebration. It just started 2 days, 3 days ago or so, and it will last in some cultures, like in Iran, the celebration lasts for 14 days. In some cultures, like there are areas in Pakistan, they observe Nowruz, which will last for 3 days. Some cultures observe that for 7 days. So why we need to learn about these celebrations? Let me spend maybe 10 minutes on that and that. If we have the understanding of their celebrations, that what they adore the most as even being here in our own country, that gives us opportunity to try to be part of their celebration, not part of their religion or beliefs, but part of their celebration, because we do need some opportunity. We need some opening, because when they come here with all this negative kind of mindset that Christians believe in God the Father and then the Son and then Mary as the third member of the Trinity, as opposed to the real Trinity, which is not the Mary but the Holy Spirit. So we need to find out opportunities that how we can clear up that mess in their mind or those misconceptions. And best way is to start befriending with them. Again, it might happen, it might not happen throughout our conversations, throughout our friendship with the Muslims living here, that we could explain to them. But we need to present the gospel, and the best way is start befriending with them and then kind of encourage them to start asking questions. And I'm telling you, based on my experience with so many Muslims and also with my Christian friends here, that those who have these opportunities to befriend with Muslims, that Muslims are very eager to ask questions. They just wait for the opportunity that when some Christians, some Americans will become their friends and they can share their thoughts, they can ask these questions about Christians and Christian belief or Christian faith and even their culture. So starting by befriending with Muslims is the best way to take our journey or our desire to influence the life of Muslim living around us to the next step. So as I mentioned on the four stages, the first stage, that friendship, and there are few things which always help, that help to reinforce our friendship. One of my missionary friends who have spent 40 plus years in Iran and Egypt and other Muslim countries always says that stronger the bridge of your friendship will be, the stronger the probability of influencing your Muslim friend's life. So if you can take your friendship to the point where your Muslim friend trusts in you and sees value in your opinion and your your thoughts or your or in that friendship, that will bear more probability of changing their lives, and that requires the understanding of their culture, which ethnic background they are coming from. We don't need to learn the language, but even learning just few words, how to greet, how to say word salam, because this is a very common word used across the board by Muslims to greet themselves as compared to Christians or English-speaking world where we say hi or hello. So if you, instead of when you are meeting with a Muslim, if you say salam, I'm telling you that it will change the whole spectrum of your friendship with them or interaction with them. So there are few words, how to greet or how to ask in their own word. Let's say if somebody is from India, how to say aap kaise hain, how are you or how are you doing. So just few words, if you invest like 30 minutes of your time, your life in learning those few phrases, that can go a long way. Acknowledge their culture. Every person, like as Americans, we have our unique culture, and we adore that. We appreciate that culture. We love our culture. We love our food, and this is the same case with them. And now they are here in our country. So they have challenges. One challenge, biggest challenge, is how to assimilate in new culture, how to adopt new culture. And they still want to adore and you know, practice their own culture, because this is where they are from. This is how they have lived all of or most of their lives. So having a little understanding how they wear, what they wear, like I will never like think about that if a Christian is befriending a Muslim and decides to take and wants to bring a meal to their Muslim friends and cooks pulled pork and takes it to them, will it be helpful? No. So if we have better understanding and we know, oh, they will adore some moderately spiced food or like lamb or something like that, and we take that will, like, I mean, I'm telling you, that will help our friendships in so many ways. Or even like clothing, like we are visiting one of our Muslim friends and I'm American, and instead of wearing just our casual clothing, which is nothing bad with that, but they come from, think about them, try to stand in their shoe. So you can like do things, very, very small things, which will really, the reward will be great, that they will help develop a more kind of like a value in their eyes, in their mind, for your friendship or for you, in their views. So understanding their culture helps, and we live in a media age where you don't have to go and take any classes. If you come across a Muslim from African culture, you can just Google and learn basic things, that how they wear, what they wear, what kind of food they like. Like if you decide ever to invite a Muslim friend's family to a restaurant, instead of picking up a restaurant which is not really like something that they will appreciate, you can pick up a restaurant which serves some of their food. Like if I am inviting a Middle Eastern, I will go to a Middle Eastern restaurant, and there are like hundreds of them everywhere in every part of our nation. So understanding their like culture, their language goes a long way. So all these help kind of like strengthen our friendship with them. And once you have developed that little understanding by investing some of your time, you can